Well, people, what is happening? Welcome back to Josh Talks. This week on the podcast, we have Nathan Doak. We'll talk about his career playing for Ulster Rugby, talk about his debut, talk about his last four appearances for Ulster Rugby. We'll talk about how he first started, you know, what's coming up in his career, what his goals, what his achievements are. We'll talk about all of that. Nathan has appearances for Ireland under 20s. He's represented Ulster first team. We'll talk about some of his best moments in an Ulster shirt. Then the following week, we're going to have an Olympian on. The week after that, we have an MMA coach from Australia on. And the week after that, we have a Cage Warriors champion. So there's a lot going on in Josh Talks, and I'm going to release more and more about this as the weeks goes on. I was also able to get an interview with Smiling Sam. You may know his name from the UFC. We managed to grab a quick 10-minute interview with him, which we're going to release on Facebook, Spotify, etc. We've got some video footage. Going to release it on TikTok, so make sure you're following me at Josh Talks. Make sure you hit that follow button and you're following on all social channels. I'll probably release most of my content on Facebook and Instagram. That's where you're going to find the majority of the information about this show. Make sure you hit that follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just gives me a wee bit of feedback about how I'm doing. Make sure you leave a review. It really, really helps. And send me a wee message. Say what you're enjoying. Give me a few guests that you would like to see on the show. So, without further ado, let's go. Welcome to Josh Talks. Well, Nathan, how's the form?
Yeah, all good. Bit disappointing from the game, obviously, but yeah, learning from it.
Well, how have you found this season? Obviously, getting a lot more starts. You're playing quite well at the minute. How have you found it?
Unexpected, to be honest. Going into the season, if you had told me I would have had four starts and this much game time, I would have maybe even laughed. But I've enjoyed it loads. I was always ready to go. I believed in myself, and I was confident if I did get an opportunity that I wanted to take it. So I've really enjoyed it, and hopefully there's more to come.
So I had on the podcast, I had Adam McBurney. I've known Adam for years now. I played with him at Randallstown, and then I got Mike on, and obviously they're from two sort of different backgrounds. Adam came through the club setup, and then Obviously Mike came through schools. What have you found like the biggest difference in coming from the school setup?
I would say schools. Probably it's more watched in the sense of like the Skills Cup final. You could talk about it. It seems like it's a bigger deal than probably the club system. And I would have close connections with guys in the club system, and they really enjoyed it as well. But maybe it's more the public eye that would be a lot more watched on the school system, probably because there's more kids maybe involved, and it's such a big deal for the school, which is great for the schools and maybe not so great for the clubs. But speaking to guys in the clubs, they enjoy their time there hugely as well, and probably if you give them the opportunity to they might do both, maybe to go into the schools, go into clubs. Like I know a guy that chose to stay with the clubs because he enjoyed it so much rather than come into a better school and play school rugby. Some people may talk about it saying the clubs may get a bigger opportunity. To be honest, I wouldn't have as much knowledge about that and how it's run and stuff, but I think that they're both really good opportunities, and guys coming from both really enjoy them thoroughly. So I think it's great to be getting the opportunity to represent Ulster both in schools and in clubs.
The one thing that I've noticed definitely about school rugby is all the top teams, all the top schools, they're so well drilled, very, very disciplined, and it's very, very structured.
Yeah, look, the top schools nowadays, they have some decent coaches. And players being involved with Ulster that know from an early age they want to play professional rugby, I think they take a great lead on it, just being involved with other players and stuff in schools and talking to other coaches. Like, I know that the guys would bring their knowledge back that they get from Ulster and try and get it into the school and try and help others out because they want their school to do well. So that balance of having the coaches. I was very lucky. I had Kyle McCall come into my last year. He's an ex-pro. Now he's retired. Derek Suffren, who's been doing it for 16 years. Very well respected coach. And like, them guys were great. Like, you couldn't ask for much more, to be honest, in that school's setup. So it doesn't surprise me too much that they are so well looked after and drilled with the level of coaching and players bringing their knowledge back.
What did a typical day at Wallace look for you in terms of rugby? Like, how many days a week were you training with the school, and how many gym sessions, etc.?
It's pretty intense, to be honest, even at school level. Like, it's three gym sessions a week and three pitch sessions a week. And then we would have some meetings and stuff in around that. We would have trained pretty hard early at the start of the week, around that Monday and Tuesday day, and then got a wee bit of recovery. And then tailored off at the end of the week, Thursday and Friday. Didn't do anything Friday. And then Thursday was a bit more of a captain's run and kind of chill out, feel good sessions. So it's not too dissimilar from the pro game, to be honest. I think schools and stuff are trying to replicate that as much as they can, obviously. And facilities, I suppose, have a massive impact on that. And I think that we're quite lucky now. A lot of top schools have very good facilities to be able to deliver a program that's suitable for such a high-level performance of school rugby.
Do you think it's hard to balance, especially at that young age, rugby and school, like the education side, or is there a good balance there?
I think it can be tough. It's definitely tough if you don't stay on top of it, but I think if you can stay on top of it and commit to it, I don't see why you can't. Definitely in school. Like, I know my mates, they done it. Sorry. And then myself, I kind of took a backward step, I suppose, on education maybe in my last year, because I was so involved with rugby. I maybe didn't have as much time, and I kind of knew my path a wee bit, I suppose. And to be honest, I'd probably regret that, in the sense that COVID came about and we got predicted grades. But I think it actually, it can take your mind off rugby a bit when you're doing a bit of work and doing a bit of education and stuff. It's kind of nice. Like, I would try and read into some stuff nowadays and just keep taking over on that education side, because at the end of the day, like, you want to keep learning about everything in life. And if you can take things from different aspects in your life and bring them into your work, which is in my case rugby, then it can help massively. And that's what I've kind of learned. So I'd never neglect education for rugby. I suppose if I got the opportunity again, I'd be very open for learning.
Mm-hmm. What about in terms of when you're at Wallace and then you're also at the Ulster setup? Was Ulster training at night time, I think?
When I was young, they would have trained at night time, but in my last year of school there, like I just said, they would have trained during the day, and then I would have had to get out of school when I was involved with Ulster A and the seniors while I was still at school. I would have had to an arrangement made that I would have had to change some classes moving forward and stuff, and kind of leave school early to kind of go to training. But in the end, it all worked out all right. I actually really enjoyed it, and fair play to Wallace for letting me do that. I know it wasn't easy on them at some points, because you get kind of parents and stuff where their kids aren't involved in sport, and they're maybe going like, oh, why is this guy going to do this and stuff? And like, they stuck by me. They let me continue to leave school early, come into school late, and enjoy, and let me enjoy my rugby and not have that pressure of facing, say, parents or teachers questioning what I was doing. So I have to give them massive respect for that, as well as Ulster for going into the school and giving back to them, kind of helping them out in anything they could. So it was actually a great relationship that worked out well for both parties, I think.
What was it like in terms of standard, you know, from going from playing school rugby games, training with obviously your classmates, and then going into a professional setup, which is Ulster A and then Ulster as the first team?
I think obviously a lot changes in terms of I think the physicality and speed is the biggest two things. I'm sure if you speak to a lot of people, they'll probably say the same. The speed and the physicality is unmatched. You can't really get near it. But in terms of your game, like, you're still passing the ball, you're still hitting your kicks, you're still making your tackles. The basics of the game don't change, I don't think, at any level. I just think the guys that they just become more important the levels you go up. You can't make the same mistakes because you just get punished. But I was very lucky in Wallace to play with such a great bunch of lads. We were so competitive. We all went towards that goal of winning the school's cup, and they were very talented rugby players as well. So I was very, very lucky to play with such a good group of mates and players from such a early age. Like, first year, I was playing with lads that were involved with Ulster, and we had a number of boys involved with Ulster and stuff, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out for them, or they didn't go down that path. So I would say I was very lucky to be involved with such great mates and great rugby players that were all very committed to winning the school's cup from such an early age as well. So I think that in terms of the change, there obviously is a huge change on pressure and physicality and stuff like that. But in terms of playing the actual game of rugby, not much changes. You're still making your tackles and doing your basics and stuff like that. So I think it's important to I always put a focus on it when I was playing, just to make sure I was doing my basics well and then enjoying myself.
At Ulster, would you also be signed to a club team as well?
Yeah, I'm signed for Banbridge Rugby Club. So I am.
Have you made any appearances for Banbridge?
No, unfortunately not. I haven't actually. I've never played for them, but my close friend would. So I'd go up and watch and be a part of the club and stuff. And they're great to me, even though I never have played. I was down at the pre-match lunch last week and stuff, and I've good relationships with people down there, and it's a great club to be a part of.
So, see, in terms of like Banbridge, etc., is that more of, for example, fingers crossed it doesn't happen, but say you got injured and you were coming back from injury, it would be just a chance to get some games in?
I suppose it could be, but if you're not playing any rugby and there's an opportunity to play, like, I think obviously these 3 weeks where there's games not coming up, guys that haven't had as much game time may be released to their club so they can get some games. Which is great. Obviously, getting to see Ulster players getting to play for their club. Like, some people may think the Ulster guys kind of neglect playing for their club, like they couldn't really be bothered, or this isn't my standard. But like, speaking to the guys and like myself personally, like, I'd love to play for my club. Like, no one's really had that much rugby the last 18 months, and any opportunity you get to play rugby, like, it's the same as anyone. You're going to take it, and just playing for club or playing for Ulster, like, the guys would love it. And hopefully one day I actually do get to put on a Banbridge top and get to play with them and represent the club, albeit, and hopefully it's not an injury or lack of game time. But if it ever came about, I'd really enjoy it, to be honest.
Is there any of the other Ulster boys that are signed to Banbridge?
Yeah, there's a good few. I think there's a few that maybe won't get released just with how things have went for them. Eric O'Sullivan, Nick Timoney, Dave McCann, Greg Jones, David O'Connor, Callum Reid, Robbie Little, James Hume, Mike Laurie, myself, Ben Carson, and Jude Pothelswit. So there's a good few boys there.
I was talking to Adam about this when I had him on, and he was sort of saying that in terms of, well, he went for the club setup, but then it was playing for Ulster, and then it was playing for Ireland, and then it was trying to push for Ulster A's, and then it was, you know, pushing on to the first team. And it was like he was saying, in terms of like the milestones to hit, every jump was just a wee bit further away. Like, it was just a wee bit tougher, like the competition. And the big thing that he said was like the physicality, which you've mentioned.
Yeah, it's a complete fair point. Every standard you go up, you're going to face more competition. There's the pool of people, I suppose, gets smaller. But I suppose comes with that, comes, hopefully it brings the best out of you. I feel that does for me. Like, when I go up a level, I kind of feel it brings the best out of me in the sense of delivering, hopefully, as close to my best performance I can, because I know it's going to be needed if I want to reach my goals. So it's, as a competitor, for the pool to get smaller and the margins to become smaller, I actually enjoy it. But he's totally right there that it does get harder. There's no denying that. And there's going to be more lows than maybe you've had. Like, there's going to be ups and downs, and there's sometimes you aren't going to get picked, or say you have a bad game and then another guy gets an opportunity. So you need a bit of luck as well as you go up the groups, because you don't know how many opportunities you're going to get. So if you're lucky, you may get one, and if you're very lucky, you may get two, as it seems. And the physicality, obviously, come from that. I'm sure Adam would probably say, as a forward, it's a lot more difficult for them guys to come through early, just with the nature of the game. And I'm quite lucky, I'm not maybe involved in as much collisions in that close quarters and stuff. So, but I definitely noticed the physicality of the game, just being in around the ruck and stuff, it's huge when you get up that top level.
Yeah, I remember talking to Mike about it, and he was talking about what some of the boys were lifting in the gym, like, and it was a crazy amount of weight for some of those boys.
Yeah, there's like, some very...
It's not mad.
Yeah, no, there's some good lifters in the team. I suppose they have to be. They stay injury-free. The lads work hard, to be fair to them, especially in the gym. And young forwards, I think, we put a big emphasis on that and try and get some size into them, because at the end of the day, you're going to a pro game, you're going to be playing against, say, back row, and they could be 130 kilos, some of them, or it could be 120, 130 kilos, 6'4", 6'5", and you could be 6'1", and you're like, well, how am I meant to win that collision? There's always smarts about it, but trying to get on as much lean mass and strength as possible at an early age for a young forward, I'd say, is very key for them.
Was there ever talk for yourself, for example, about putting on more weight, or did you know what weight that you wanted to be sitting at all times? Or,
yeah, I think I was actually speaking to someone really about 2 weeks ago about this. They were kind of asking, like, do you have to eat certain foods, and you can't eat any rubbish anymore? What weight do you have to be, and do you have to have like a 6-pack and all? And it's not like that at all. The nutritionists are great at Ulster, and they give great advice, and they kind of, like, at the end of the day, it's your body and you know how you'll feel best. So they obviously let you kind of give them what you're feeling and stuff. And if it's kind of matched in terms of, right, we'll try this. If it doesn't work out, we'll go back to this. But I've actually never had that problem, really, being a tall scrum half. I've always had a bit of weight. And I've just been running so much in the position and stuff, I haven't really found I need to put on weight or lose weight. So I've been quite lucky, to be fair. But I'm speaking to the other lads, just for putting on weight, some people find it hard and some people don't. And I think for the lads that, I suppose, find it more difficult to put on weight naturally, it can be harder for them. So it would be important to make sure that you are getting your right type of intake in terms of trying to put on weight. And nutritionists at Ulster are great. They're great to hang around as well. Like, they're not just nutritionists. They like having a bit of crack and stuff, and they'd help us out massively in Ulster, definitely.
I can't remember if it was Adam or Mike, but I was talking to them and sort of about weight and what it was like, you know, going through the Ulster setup. And the big point that they were saying was about finding your fighting weight, you know, finding what weight you're more comfortable at. And I think it was Adam made the point that, you know, that he's went through stages of his career where he tried to put on more muscle, and he's just felt too heavy. So it's about tapering off a wee bit, getting that speed, and then talking to Mike, and he was saying, like, you know, there's no point in me putting on a whole lot of weight when my game's built on speed.
Yeah, no, that would be... I sit beside Mike in the locker room, so and obviously being halfbacks and stuff, we talk loads. And yeah, obviously Mike's game is based around speed, and he was kind of talking to me about putting on weight and stuff. And Mike, for such a young age, as an out half as well, he's unbelievable professional. So he is. He looks after himself so well, and me sitting beside him in the locker room and stuff, and asking him questions. He probably doesn't even realize, but I'm picking up loads off him. But yeah, like it is about finding that kind of balance. Like personally, like even speaking to Cooney, when we talk about our weights and stuff, like. I think he was telling me he was like, there was a stage in his career where he was like, oh, I kind of want to make more tackles. So he went and put on more weight, but then he kind of found actually got a wee bit slower. So he's like, nah, I don't want that. And then he dropped down a bit, and he's kind of feeling that since he's dropped down a wee bit, he's playing his best rugby. So it's just about kind of finding that weight that you think works best for you. And then I think you'll know what weight that is. You'll know when you're too heavy and when you're too light, and you'll know you're fighting with it, kind of feel. So once you get that, it's just about sticking with it. And if you can get a kg of lean muscle or improve in any area of your body physically, then it's a great asset.
What about in terms of making your debut for Ulster? What was going for your mind when you found out you were getting into the squad and you were going to come on? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was for that week, it was kind of surreal. My Ulster debut got delayed, really. I got appendicitis and had to get surgery on my stomach before that, and I kind of knew that my Ulster debut was around the corner, and then I ended up rushing that kind of surgery back, and then it put me out for another wee bit and stuff. And my body wasn't in a great place at that time, at the start of the season last year. And then I got named in the A team on the bench, and I kind of thought, flip me, I'm playing. I didn't think I'd be, because I hadn't even trained at this stage, just with my injury. And then I came off the bench, and I did really well. And then I kind of got told I was going to be in the squad for the week after. Just give myself a bit of preparation. And once I went into that week, looking back now, I don't think I was ready in the terms of looking after myself. I don't think I took my opportunity as well last year, and I think that I learned that I knew I hadn't, and I suppose paid the price that I didn't play much game time last year, and I think that was tough for me. There was obviously Albie and Shanners and John, and they're all playing so well, so I didn't really get much of a look in. So when I came around to this year, I kind of knew I needed to be ready to take an opportunity if I got it. So I think it's about always being ready to play. Even if you aren't playing, if you are playing, you need to be ready to play. In the pro game, you need to have a bit of luck. And lucky enough, I got a second opportunity when the coaches put faith in me to go on the bench ahead of Dave. And I had a lot more confidence this year because I knew that I removed that self-doubt of I've worked hard for this now, I've got my body right, I've got my mind right. There was nothing going to really stop me. It was down to me now in performing for the team, and thankfully I did that this year rather than last year.
Was there any conversations that you had with coaches just before you came on or in the changing room and what they said to you?
On my debut?
Yeah.
No, not really. The coaches kind of just tell me, really every time, just they know what I can bring, and they know my talents, and they know my personality, and they just tell me to express myself, go out there, play my game, and enjoy it. I play my best rugby when I'm enjoying myself, on the pitch, I think. And I think they've probably noticed that as well when I'm kind of more relaxed, chilled back, and enjoying my rugby. I feel that it brings the best out of me. When I lose that enjoyment factor for it, I suppose you could call it, feels a bit more like work, and I probably don't deliver my best performance. So keeping the enjoyment factor in rugby, is huge. And I think it's easy. You can kind of lose that when you come into at an early age and you're not playing and you're just training and you're just, it just kind of feels like a job. So it's that's how I've kind of learned, like, how can I keep the enjoyment factor when, say, you're not playing or things like that, of just improving yourself. The coaches have been great for me. They just kind of tell me to back myself, enjoy it, and just be me, really.
Bit of a change of topic here, but what's your hobbies outside of rugby?
That's actually a good one, because I was kind of for a bit coming home going like, oh, what do I do now? I've actually picked up reading a wee bit recently. So I have, I'm reading Ant Middleton's book at the moment. And I think I've actually really enjoyed it because I never really would have been much of a reader at all. So it's new to me. Outside of rugby, like, to be honest, it's all really sports. I used to play a lot of different sports when I was younger. I would be a big football fan.
Oh, who do you sport?
Man United.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you were watching the game yesterday.
Yeah, I was. John Cooney's a Liverpool supporter, and Adam's sending me WhatsApp all day. I just was going to throw my phone away, but no, I'd love my football and a few of my mates would play football. So I would go watch their games and stuff. They play midweek sometimes, and I'd watch a lot of football and enjoy it. My brother plays cricket for Ireland, so I'd go watch him play and stuff, and I'd have a big association with the cricket from my days of playing and my club and stuff. It'd be a great social club to go down as well, and hang out there, and I do that a lot in the summer. And then just hanging out with my mates would probably be the main thing. It's like you don't really see them, I suppose, as much. So when you get like a half day or something or a day off, I love going out for lunch and grabbing a coffee, going for a walk, chilling out. And I suppose I have two dogs at the house as well. I'd be a big dog person, so I'd chill out with them, take them for walks and stuff, and kick a ball about, and yeah, just kind of really chilling out and hanging out with my mates. I suppose it's a pretty young guy thing, I suppose, and generic, but yeah, just keeping active, playing a bit of sport, hanging out with my mates, passes the time well, and I enjoy it loads.
100%, mate, 100%. I have to ask, yes, and knowing that you're a United fan, is Ollie at the wheel? Or are we keeping him at the wheel?
Listen, I don't know. I suppose it's a bit of a catch-22. Like, I would love to see him stay and win trophies, and I think it'd be a great story. But at the minute, it doesn't really look too great for him. I don't know. I don't know if he's the right man or not. At the minute, I'd probably say that if there was a more experienced manager in there, would he be doing a better job? I don't know. I suppose I know what pro sport's like, and I'd never say someone should lose their job, but if there's someone better out there for the job that can take United further, I think United should obviously look at that. But the players have responsibility as well. It's never just down to the coach. Like, watching the game yesterday, the players made a few mistakes. And ultimately that leads to everyone talking about the coach getting sacked. But there needs to be a stage as well where players take responsibility. And I think that comes back to even in rugby as well. Like us against Connacht, there was no coaches out there on the pitch at the end of the day. It was 15 lads, and the coaches can't do much after the whistle goes at the start of the game. So the players also need to take responsibility for their actions and the result as well. But unfortunately, in football, it comes down to who the manager is and the coach. And if the team aren't playing well, he ends up losing his job. So it's a tough one for him.
I think, like, I'd be a massive Liverpool fan. That's love Liverpool. But I think, personally, for United, I think United has got too many mercenaries playing.
Yeah.
I think people who don't actually care about Man United, they're just there to collect a massive wage. And I think what you said about, you know, why is it so easy to sack a manager compared to the players? And I think it's because when you've got those players, they're a massive name. They are all massive money. And it's a massive investment. And it's probably easier the cutter manager than it is one of those guys.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably easier to cut Ole Gunnar Solskjaer than I suppose Paul Pogba or something like that. Yeah, no, definitely. I think football's a wee bit more different like that than the players are such big celebrities and such well followed and so much money involved. It can be difficult and to cut a player. So I do feel for Ole. He's in a tough role and stuff, but that's pro sport at the end of the day. It's a cutthroat business and stuff. So we're in a business that's result based, and if you're not getting results, you're always going to have a tough time.
I think it's also different as well in terms of, you know, a lot of the boys who play for Ulster have all come from the province.
Yeah.
As well. And, you know, like it's different between that and football, because how many footballers at the minute could you name that are from Manchester playing for Man United or from Liverpool playing for Liverpool?
No, I know. I kind of feel like it's more as well. Football's such a global sport. Like kids growing up in Portugal are dreaming of playing for Liverpool or Man United. I suppose they are dreaming of playing obviously for the teams in Portugal as well, but they're also going in their career. They want to go to the top level. They're like, I want to play for Man United or Liverpool. Where I suppose when you grow up here, and all we're kind of thinking about is, I want to win trophies with Ulster. I'm not really thinking about, oh, I want to go win trophies with Saracens over in England.
Yeah.
So it is a wee bit different. It's such a global sport compared to rugby. And it's, I suppose, yeah, you do have a few people, and I suppose Curtis Jones there in Liverpool, that's
Trent,
up there.
Yeah, Trent as well.
And I think the football fans enjoy that story so much when you do get a player that's from the club. And it is great in any sense, in any sport, if you do get a homegrown player that comes in and wins trophies with your team. It is hard to beat. So I'm sure the football clubs, if they could do it, they would. But if there's so many people playing football and there's someone better than you, then it's a tough one. So
it's one of those ones as well that what you can see over here, especially with rugby or football, you know, anyone who makes it in that pro game or goes on and makes appearances for Ireland or whatever, they're so well thought of. Like, I am sure that you've been to schools and you've been walking through and you've seen pictures of people who have went to the school who have went on and represented Ulster or Ireland. Yeah. Or you go to a club and you can see all the caps.
Yeah, no, it's I think that's great. Like,
of course, yeah.
Definitely. Like, suppose walking past and seeing how people in your position have done before you, it gives you a bit of motivation. They go, well, I want my name up on the wall. So it's so well, rugby in this country anyway, it's so well respected, and it's so well followed and stuff, and it's great to have that, I suppose. We were kind of talking earlier in the week, like, it's hard to get a better gig than playing for Ulster. Like, you're in a small country, I suppose, in Northern Ireland. You're in a good city in Belfast where the supporters are great. It's such a well-followed club. It's number one sport in the country. It's number one team in the country. We're over in England, maybe. You've all these prem footballers and football teams, and you've got the cricket as well. It's huge. Rugby can maybe take a backward step. We're here. It's fairly focused as a number one thing, and when that's going well for you, it's great. And I suppose when you don't get a great result, you definitely hear about it. So I think playing in rugby in Ulster, it's definitely hard to beat.
The one thing that I've noticed from doing the podcast and talking to people like yourself and talking to all these like different professions, you realize how crazy being a supporter is, you know, because supporters have so many different opinions of what way games should have went or what the coach should have done differently, or he should have kicked it instead of passing, or he should have passed instead of kicking it. But then when you actually talk to the person who is involved in that situation, you realise the actual thought process that went into that, why that decision was made. And I think football's a great example. You know, you hear often, like, you hear supporters saying, oh, the manager should have played a 4-3-3 or saying something like that. But then when you actually listen to the manager talk, about why I did that, there was a reason. It wasn't just as simple as, oh, I picked that formation out of my head. There was a reason why I did it.
Yeah, no, it's you need to have a thought process behind the stuff you do. I think it's easy to for people that aren't involved to forget that the guys doing it as well are supporters. Like, that was the first thing they were before they started playing, if you get me. Like, the guys know when you make a mistake. Like, that's obviously, like, if he knows, like, if he's met the possible and he say kicked it, he's like, ah, oh, flip, I should have passed it there. Like, he does know. And at the end of the day, it's the guys that are in the position of, say, the manager or the player, they're in that because they're, I suppose, the best person for the job, and they're getting paid and picked to pick the right formation or pick the right team. And sometimes you do get it wrong. You're not going to get it right every time. So they're going to need to have, they're going to think about it. They're going to have a process behind their selection, and they obviously want the best for the club, as they will support the club. They want to see the club to do well. And sometimes it doesn't always work out for you. And then that obviously comes back to your thought process, but you'll learn from it hugely. Say if you do get it wrong one week, then you'll know the next week how I can improve it, how I'm going to see it. So, yeah, I think it's easy for supporters to kind of forget that the players are the supporters too. Like, I was an Ulster supporter before I ever played for Ulster, and I still am. So it's I think it's easy for them to forget, to kind of just look at it as, oh, we're just picking up our paychecks and this is our job. But no, like, we want to see Ulster do well. We're supporters of the club, and getting to play for them is just an added bonus. It's a huge privilege for us.
Yeah. I think what you were saying before as well, you know, that there's, especially at that top level, you do need a wee bit of good fortune and you need a wee bit of luck. There was, I don't know, you probably wouldn't know him, but so I had a guy on the podcast. He told him, I've told the story a number of times, but it's one of those stories that's completely unbelievable. There was a guy, he's from Rathcoole, and he's called Andy Mitchell. He's currently playing for Larne in Irish League. But his journey, at 12 years old, he was playing football and he was going for trials all over the country. He was going across the water. He was going to Aberdeen. He was going to Sunderland. He was going to all these massive, massive, massive clubs that wanted him. And Man City got involved. And this was before, you know, Man City had the money.
Yeah.
So Man City said to him, listen, we want you to, well, they said to his parents, we want your son to sign for the club. What we're willing to do is we're willing to pay for a house for you and your family, basically, to stay in at 12 years old, to come over to Manchester and live, and you'll train full time as a footballer as well as going to school. So they flew him over at 12, and that's what he did. And then he was saying to me, like, if you know football at a professional level, it's so unheard of for people to move over at that young age, because what they like to do is like to wait till you're 16, 17, because you can move over without your parents and you're living with other, you know, kids your own age, so it's cheaper for them.
Yeah.
So he moves over at Manchester, he's going through the setup. He's going through the setup, basically. Gets through the setup. He goes to, I think it's, I don't know if it was like under 20 football, it was whatever one was below reserve.
Yeah. And, under 23.
Yeah, say under 23, he was doing that. And the Sheiks came over and took over Manchester. They came up, took over City. Started bringing in like all these world class talents. Like, so you had Rubinho and et cetera, Aguero signing for the club. All these people that were on massive amounts of money. And the first thing that they do is they arrange for Man City's reserves to play in a competition. And it's basically like, do you know, like when you win like the European Cup, you go in and you're playing like, I don't know, it's like a Super Cup almost. It's like all the South American teams and stuff.
Yeah.
They arrange for that competition and it's in Dubai. So they're all playing this competition. It's all the best teams in the world. First time he goes over, he's from Rathcoole, so he's never experienced like the massive amounts of money that's in football. So the first thing to do is to get on a plane. And on this plane, it's a private jet, and it's all Emirates girls. So for all the players, they have one Emirates girl each for every single player in the squad. Jeez. They then give them like a bag full of like goodies. And in this bag, it's all like Schwartzy crystals, like Parker pens. So just like all these like wee touches. At the time, those like crystals were worth hundreds of pounds. And like he wasn't on a good wage at this stage. Like he was just, you know, like an academy player.
Yeah.
So he's getting all these crystals. Goes over, plays in this competition, does really well, scores the penalty that wins him the whole competition. He comes back to Manchester and the coaches pull him aside and say, listen, we want you to sign a contract with us for the reserve team. But we're going to be really honest with you. We don't think you're going to get any first team appearances for us because the pathway is completely blocked. We're bringing in world-class players here and you're just not at that level yet.
Yeah.
So they say, we can let you go. There's a few teams that have came in for you. And one of the teams that came in for him was Rangers. So he was from Rathcoole. He supported Rangers. So that was like an absolute dream move. Goes to Rangers, gets down to the stadium, and there's hundreds of fans outside waiting on him getting there. Just because they've heard that Rangers are signing someone from Man City. They thought he was signing for the first team, but he was signing for the youth squad. Gets down to the youth squad, and he's really, really struggling to get game time. And they come and say to him, listen, we don't think you're quite good enough at this level. We're going to let you go. At the end of your contract, you can either stay and finish out your contract, or we can just terminate it now and you know, go do whatever you want. And he decides to himself that he's going to work harder in training and he's going to come in on his days off, you know, just to try and give himself a wee bit of good fortune. Yeah. Starts coming in on his days off. He's doing that for a few weeks and one of the first team coaches sees him training and they say, listen, we're short of body here. Someone's getting injured. Can you come up and train with us? So he goes up and trains with the first team, does really, really well. The first team invite him back to start training with the first team. A few months pass and he's named in the squad to face Celtic at the Old Firm. So he's on the bench for that. Doesn't come on, but great experience for him. Rangers then, I don't know if you would know much about Rangers, but they went into like administration.
Rangers. Yeah, I know they did, yeah.
Yep, so they went into administration and they were going down the league, so all their best players left.
Yeah.
Went down to League Three. And they're playing there. He starts getting game time regularly. It gets to the end of the season where he's playing like every single week for Rangers first team from being told that he's going to be let go. Gets down to, I think that was the last 8 games of the season, and he gets 7 man of the matches. Oof. They get promoted to Division 2, and the manager comes to him and says, listen, we're going to be letting you go at the end of your contract. We want to bring in people who have played in the first division. We want to bring in these players. And want to bring in more experience. You're still very young. And we'll try and sort of move out for you. Whatever. So he goes on a summer holiday. He's completely disappointed. And a team, I think it was like Motherwell, came in for him. And at the time, they were in Division 2. And Rangers just went into Division 2. And in his head, he thought he was too... In his own words, he said he was too good to play for Motherwell. That's what he thought. He wanted to try and play at a higher level. And he held out, and he held out, and he held out. And... gets to the end and he gets a phone call from his phone. It's from Motherwell, just replaced their manager. And the manager said to him, he says, listen, we're not going to offer you that contract. I want to bring in my own players. So we no longer want you. So he's without a team. And the only team that'll take him is a team in the conference in England. So he goes into like, it's like the sixth division of English football. And he says like for those 3 months that he was there, he just got the legs kicked off him. He says it was completely awful. Hated every moment. And at the time, him and his girlfriend, like, so he wasn't on a great wage, and him and his girlfriend needed like a proper job.
Yeah.
So he ends up coming home, gets a job in Screwfix, and starts playing for Crusaders. And it's just like one of those mad stories, like from being at the very, very top, you know, where you're playing for Rangers and your Man Cities. And it just changes so, so quickly. Like, professional sports is unlike anything in this world. Like, it just changes so fast.
Yeah, no, definitely. I suppose I know a few stories like that. It's definitely tough on someone to experience that. I think that's what we were speaking about earlier about that education and stuff. It is well known now that you need maybe a backup because things like that can happen. Like, I suppose it's a it's It's definitely hard, and I think that it's well recognized as well in the players in the business that we're in that that can't happen. So it is about always trying to give your level of performance that's going to keep you in a job. And like I said earlier, like the luck is huge in pro sport. And that guy gets 7 man of matches out of 8 and still couldn't get a job. Like it's so unlucky. So crazy to think that that wouldn't happen. And I suppose probably in football, it may be a bit more cutthroat. Just with the amount of people that play, statures of clubs, the more money involved. Which is really disappointing to hear that. But stuff like that does happen, and I suppose it's sometimes forgotten about that can happen in this industry, and it's just not great to hear, is it?
I think professional sports, especially team sports, it's a game of opinions.
Yeah.
You know, everything, it's like what the coach thinks of you at a certain stage of your career, what's the scout think of you? You know, it's all these different opinions on that given day. There is quite a good bit of luck, but obviously you need that talent as well.
Yeah, like coaches have their own philosophy on how they want to play, and sometimes players don't fit the bill. Suppose you could look at United and talk about Donny van de Beek and Solskjaer. Yeah, he's obviously a very, very good player. He's worth a lot of money, and he was brought in and he can't seem to get a game for whatever reason. Certainly not for a lack of talent anyway. And he maybe just hasn't had that luck to kind of break through, get into the team and get in the manager's favour. You see a number of cases like that. Players follow their manager because they get on so well with them and have such a good relationship. I think it's maybe because the manager or the coach is, at the end of the day, like it's their job as well. They have an income for their family and they're picking a team that they know that they're hoping that can get them a win. So if you're picking, say, a player the coach doesn't trust, he's maybe inconsistent, but his ceiling's higher than another player. But another player just always performed, but he doesn't create magic moments or he doesn't have big moments. He just will do his job and be solid, I suppose, average. But he's going to produce that every week. The coach can, more often than not, they'll side with that player because they're going to get consistency and out of him, and they've got trust that they know what they're going to bring. And like, I'd find that you see a lot of them cases in rugby anyway. So it is important, I suppose, getting in that coach's favour and trying to get the coach's trust in you to be able to be selected.
I think that's massive. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Especially, I feel like sometimes the supporters, what we're very guilty of doing is we forget that people are playing for a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like some hobby. It's that this person is dependent on this job for a mortgage or a house or their family or whatever. Sometimes we forget that as supporters, I think.
Yeah. I'd also say, I suppose, players, they are looking sympathy, but it is a reality of the work. It's also difficult. I'd say it's very difficult for players that have had the experience that going from being playing in front of 15,000 people, the adrenaline, everything to do with, and then going to work in Screwfix. Like that would be so tough. So would the supposed deal with that.
What I would say is that in terms of the Irish League, I feel like the Irish League is getting so much better now because there's like a lot of teams that you probably heard yourself have adopted like a full time model.
Yeah.
So a lot of those boys now are now coming home from England, and you know there's a full time job waiting for them to play professional sports. And I think it's going to, I believe personally, I could be completely wrong. I think Northern Ireland's international team is going to get a lot better because there's more opportunity for kids who might have threw the head up after coming home. Because you hear that story all the time. You could probably name dozens of people who have done the same with rugby or whatever. But you hear about all these kids who have all this ability and something just doesn't quite happen for them in that moment. And they come home and they're like, well, this is it. The sports stream is over. But, you know, now there's an opportunity to come back home and play your sport. Maybe not a higher level, but definitely at a full-time level.
Yeah, it's the word that... The word that sticks out for me there is what you use, opportunity. Like, it's, I think that's what you need. If you've got an opportunity, you've got to back yourself to be able to take it and improve and hopefully get a wee bit of luck along the way. And then you never, you may go back to the top of the game, but Irish League, yeah, it's, I was actually down and watching a game about a month ago and stuff, and there was actually a decent crowd at it, and I think it'd be great to see football become a bigger thing than what it is, I suppose, at the minute, and grow as a game over here, because like, everyone here obviously loves football, but maybe they just don't have that follow in the Irish League because it's not at the standard and the structure of what it is in England. So yeah, if the facilities, I suppose, and opportunity and stuff comes around for the younger guys and for guys coming home and they bring their experience back, it'd be great for Northern Ireland. And how awesome would it be to see Northern Ireland as a football team do well? It'd be great.
It'd be fantastic. Yeah, mate, I was actually completely buzzing. So I had, would you follow Northern Ireland football team at all?
Yeah.
So I had Connor Washington on my podcast.
Nice.
And sent talking away to him, whatever. And I said to him after the podcast, I was like, mate, can I send you just a football top over just to get it signed?
Yeah.
And mate, I'd say 5-6 weeks passed, and sent him it was just a wee crappy training top, like.
Yeah.
And he sent me back one of his international jerseys. So it had, like, you know, like all the engravings of Northern Ireland versus like Albania or something. But I thought it was class.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really nice. It was something that he didn't have to do.
No, definitely. I think it's great to hear stuff like that. Like, I'd be a big fan of it if there was an opportunity to kind of, like, at the end of the day, like, there is a lot of people that would look up to, I suppose, sports celebrities in this country. And if you can, suppose, give back to your supporters, I think it's just great. And any opportunity I'd get to do it, I'd be hoping to take it. But to hear that story as well, like, about Connor Washington, I suppose it could be easier for footballers to kind of go, like, they have more money, I suppose, and bigger interests and stuff, and suppose it's easier to kind of fall into, like, oh, I don't need to do that. But I think Northern Ireland is such a small country, and stuff like that's so well appreciated. That's nice to hear.
The conversation that stood out to me most when I had him on was he was talking about social media.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, for a long time, he got rid of his social media. And at the time, he was playing in the championship over in England. And he said, like, he had Twitter and he wanted to talk to his friends and stuff on Twitter, but, like, it was just becoming impossible. Like, for example, if he had a bad game or he had a good game, his notifications were just off the charts, his private messages. And he says, like, the thing that wasn't even annoying him, it was the fact that it was really young kids.
Yeah.
They were just sending these messages, and he's like, man, I can't be dealing with this anymore.
Yeah, no, I know. It's the same even in rugby. I know a few people that have deleted their social media accounts and stuff, just they have to have a bad game, or I suppose, or a good game. They just, they know themselves when they have a bad or good game, and they don't need to read about it, I suppose. I kind of spoke about it on BBC last week. As a young athlete, when you see your name online and stuff, you're going to click on it. You're going to see what people are saying about you. But I think the older you get, you kind of learn that you don't need to click on that. Like about a year or two ago, if I see my name, I would have clicked on it. And nowadays, I kind of, I would kind of maybe scroll past, or I wouldn't really look into it as much. I wouldn't really care what people are saying, and I found it's helped me massively. But I feel that's a natural progression for any young athlete. When you do well and you work so hard at the start of your career and people are talking about you well, you're going to want to read it. And then I suppose you come with the negativity and then more positivity and stuff. Like you kind of fizzed a lot of it. So I'm not surprised, to be honest, to hear that he hasn't got any social media on Twitter especially.
It's just one of those ones, you know. I think you can't please everybody. You could have the best game ever. You could score a hat-trick of tries, nail 5 conversions, and someone would still out there think, nah, he's crap.
No, definitely.
You know what I mean? You can't please everybody.
No, definitely not. And I think it's important to recognize that and not try and please everyone, because it's important to stay true to yourself and true to your beliefs and try and, I suppose, not let other people's opinions of you affect you. And it's easier said than done, definitely, because you're going to want people to talk about you positively and stuff. But that isn't always the case. And like, I've had it, like, even very recently, like when I got man of the match, I thought I played all right, but there was definitely stuff where I was disappointed in myself that I could have improved. But everyone was saying how great I played, and on the flip side of that, I've played poorly. I haven't had quite a bad moment or a bad game yet at this level where people have talked about. But when I've been younger and stuff, I've missed kicks to win games, and people have talked about it. And like, for me, what I've got hugely throughout my career is I only got picked because who my dad was. Even now when I'm getting man of the match and stuff, like, there's still people saying it, but like, it doesn't bother me. Like, it's important to know you can't please everyone, and it's about staying true to yourself and true to your own beliefs, and that'll always come good in the end, I think.
100%, yeah. I just think, like, what's from my own personal opinions, is like, my opinion on everything sort of changed when I started doing the podcast. Because you start hearing people's stories, what they've been through, what they're going through, the reason for decisions. And then you realize, like, see the people who are criticizing online, or they're making statuses up as people who don't have very much going on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't put too much weight on their opinions, because they're not living in the moment. They're not living what you're doing every day. They're not in the gym every day, what you're doing. They're not on the practice pitch seeing what you're doing.
No, definitely not. And that's why I would have spoken about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer there. Like, I wouldn't just, it's so easy for me to turn around and be like, right, he's not getting results, sack him. Like, it's not as easy as that. I know what it's like. It's easy to kind of go on to social media and you can type your opinion. And I suppose it's a way of, their supporters at the end of the day as well, it's supposed, it could be a way of letting out frustration for them. And it's only because they care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I suppose that they wanna let it out, and that maybe social media can be a way for them to do it. But I think as an athlete, and if you read too much into that, it's never going to be too healthy. No matter what, if you're an athlete, or if you're working in a bakery and someone's telling you that your cookies or something are really bad, like, you're gonna go, you can create self doubt. And when self-doubt comes around, like, it's you're never going to be able to produce your best performance. You've got to have the confidence in your ability and know that you've worked hard to get to where you are today to be able to produce on the stage that you're at. So this,
as a professional in your sport, how do you protect your mindset? How do you make it stronger, make it better?
For me, it would be about removing self-doubt. I kind of feel the way to remove self-doubt is by working hard. If you put in the work and you put in the practice and you put in the preparation, I think that removes your self-doubt. You know that you've done the work. It's just about delivering now. And then when you get to the situation or the moment, you know that you've done the work, you know what your ability is, you know you can perform it, so you can concentrate on just doing it. Where if you're starting to hesitate, or you're like, oh, I didn't practice this kick this week, or you're creating that self-doubt in your mind, you're going to struggle. And a way of removing that is, I think, by playing the situation over and working hard. Working hard removes self-doubt, I believe. And I think I was just a bit comfortable in, like, I worked hard when I was younger and stuff, but I was always, I suppose, comfortable in some sense, that I knew that with my talent and the ability that I had, I didn't need to go out and do some stuff that, say, other people are doing. And I think it's about finding the right balance for you in how you work. Like for me, I believe it's about quality over quantity. I feel like when I'm out there for ages hitting loads of stuff, I don't get the same improvement or preparation. Rather, if I'm out there for 10 kicks, I may miss some and get some, but I'm going to learn more from them 10 kicks rather than being out there for 40 kicks. I get a better muscle memory off the 10 kicks and the career that you're going to face in game. So it's about for you and self-doubt.
Would you ever put yourself in a situation where you're visualizing what's going to happen in a game and trying to work through that in your own head?
Yeah, like I said, I picked up reading and stuff, and I've kind of found reading books about your mindset. Like, you can take it and bring it back into your sport, and I've definitely done that with rugby. And there's different ways that you can obviously try and make sure that you're able to produce in the situation you're in. Like you said there, trying to visualize that moment can be a way of creating that environment and creating that pressure. And it's something that I would do, yeah. When I'm taking my place kicking, say, I would give myself scenarios. Could it be points in game, times on game? And that's what I would try and do in goal kicking and stuff. So it's definitely something that athletes would use, about visualizing that that moment to try and recreate it. Because the more times you put in that situation, it's like experience. That's why I'm not afraid of being a young professional to throw myself into different scenarios in games and stuff. Like, I don't want to be held back because I was scared to make a mistake. I'm going to learn more and gain more experience from that mistake. I'm not afraid to make mistakes. And that's just the type of mindset I'd have.
I think that's very, very wise. Everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. What about when you're actually in those game-winning situations and you're feeling that pressure? You know, what advice would you give the young players coming through the game who are going to be in those situations? They're going to be in highly pressured situations where there's a lot on the line. How do you deal with the nerves?
It's about staying calm, I think. I think you've got to remember why you're doing it. And for me, the reason why I do it is I want to be in them situations. I want to be hitting the winning kick. Obviously, with high-pressure situations becomes a lot at stake in terms of consequence and reward. And it's about recognizing that, because you're not gonna be the hero every time. So you're not. And it's important to realize that if you aren't the hero, it's about, right, what went wrong for me in that moment and learning from it. Every opportunity you get to put yourself in that moment, I would be hugely encouraging people to take it, because when you're in that moment, that is your biggest learning zone. When you're under the biggest light, the biggest pressure, you're going to learn the most about yourself and about your ability. And you know, I've kind of found, I've missed kicks to win, and I've missed important kicks. And I missed a kick in fourth year. At the time, wasn't important. but I knew it was hugely important. But it, maybe people watching wouldn't have known it was important. But I knew it was very important, and I ended up missing it. And then 10 minutes later in the game, last play, and their team got a try, and then they had an opportunity for a kick to win, and they got it, and we put out a look up, and I learned loads from that situation that I was put in, and maybe if I had got that kick, I wouldn't have learned as much about myself, and stuff like that. But like, I enjoy being put in that environment, and I think that's something you've got to try and maybe do as well, like enjoy being put in that situation, enjoy the pressure that comes with it, and back your ability, remove that self-doubt, believe in yourself, and stay calm.
There's a lot to be said from learning from losses or learning from defeats. Like, I've had a number of guys on who have fought professionally, who have fought for the UFC, who have fought for titles, and the biggest thing that they say is, you know, like, learning from your losses, you know, in training, can't put yourself through real hard training, so you know that the fights never want to be as hard as the actual training session.
Yeah, I think that's how we would train as well. Like, in rugby, Ulster would have us training harder than the games, so you've done all your hard work. It's just about going out and delivering a performance then, I suppose. And I think you learn more from your losses and your wins, so, and you never want to lose like that. I'm not saying that. You want to win every time, but that isn't sustainable. You're never going to win every time. So when that loss does come about, it's important to recognize that and to recognize what you can take from a loss, because you can't take a win from a loss. But if you can take your learnings and next time around create the loss that you may have had, create that into a win that you gain from your learnings, that's what it's there for. And that's what you got to learn the most from a loss, I think.
Well, that's it. You know, there's things that you'll see in a loss, and there'll be holes in your game that you never knew that you had. Or things that you need to work on. And that's one of the wonderful things about sport and life in general, you know, that when something bad happens, there's always that facing that adversity and it making you stronger, making you better.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, like you said, that's life. And as a young athlete that I'm at the minute, the quicker that I can gain experience in my field, I feel that I'll improve. And like, I wouldn't say inexperience is a bad thing. Like, it's like I see some people would say that he's inexperienced, so we pick the experienced guy, doesn't get a chance. Like, experience is a huge value, but you're never going to get experience if you're not given the opportunity. It's about gaining that experience, and then when you get the experience, it's about trying to help others and trying to give off the what it's like in that moment and stuff like that. Like Cooney would do to me, like he talks about his experiences and stuff, maybe how he dealt with it and what he felt in the moment. So maybe when I get into that moment, I have a wee bit of knowledge. You're never going to get it right because everyone's different, but I have a wee bit of a sense of what it can be like.
I think that's great. It's good having very experienced players in the team, because experience is fantastic, because it means when you're going through your career, you're going to get more experience and more experience, and then eventually there's going to be someone coming up for the Ulster Academy or the ranks who are going to be saying, this is what I did in this situation, and you're going to be able to impart that knowledge on them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's I would find that really enjoyable. Like, even now being 19, if a 9-year-old come up to me and talked about what they're feeling at 9 years old, I really enjoy helping them out and really enjoy passing my knowledge on to them. I maybe get that from my dad being a coach, and I'd love that aspect of being able to pass on that knowledge and try and help out others.
Unreal, mate. So what's your goals for the future?
Kind of touched on this earlier as well, last week with BBC, people claiming for Ireland squads and stuff like that. Like, I, to be honest, I never, I still wouldn't even think of that. I've always had the dream of playing for Ulster and winning trophies for Ulster, and I just want to be able to be the best version of myself and do that in a white jersey. If something around the corner came up, getting into an Ireland squad, it would be a huge privilege and a huge honour. But at the minute, my mindset is fully focused on delivering the best version of myself and also taking any opportunity I get in the white jersey. It's something that means so much to me, and obviously just coming off the back of a defeat there, I reminisce that, and I want to be able to get back in the training now with the boys and try and put a few things right that we got wrong in the weekend, and just doing the best I can for Ulster is what I'm fully focused on at the minute.
Do you know what I was thinking, just in general? Have you ever watched those, like the shows on Amazon Prime? What do you call it? All or Nothing?
Yeah.
So what do you reckon? Ulster Rugby to do one?
It would be unbelievable. Definitely. they're class. I if someone came in and did that, like they'd definitely do really well. 100%. Like everyone would love an insight into, I'm sure, like speaking to my mates and stuff, they say to me, like, I'd love just one day to see what it's like in there in that environment. I think everyone in Belfast and Northern Ireland would definitely love to see that, and to see a rugby one as well. I think in general, like, it would definitely be well watched. And I'm sure it'd be great to be a part of it as well.
Hopefully someone from the BBC is listening. Have you ever watched any of those?
Yeah. I watched the Man City one, watched the Spurs one. They're class, I thought they were class.
Give the American football one a go, and then I'm currently watching the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like ice hockey, like I don't even like ice hockey, but yeah. I just thought, you know, I'd give it a go, man. And like, I mean, I'm growing my beard and all, like growing the beard out, growing long hair all night.
Well, very good. I have to give the NFL one a watch. Enjoy it,
mate. It's super. Did you ever watch the basketball documentary of Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I did. It was class.
Yeah, I was insane. It's his mindset. Like, I think that's next level.
Yeah,
you can see why he was so successful.
Oh, 100%. Like, and I think like the amount of people that started following basketball after that documentary, like, is huge as well, which is crazy. Grows the sport so much, I think. So if there was an opportunity for Ulster to do that, it'd definitely be worth their while.
It's even seeing You watch them boys practicing and you watch them hitting like their 3-point shots and stuff, and like without the pressure, they don't miss.
Yeah.
Like they get hit threes all day long. But it's then when you put them in like in a game situation and there's someone beside them who's like 6'11". Like I remember watching the Olympics and like I was watching the basketball, and I wouldn't follow basketball at all, but it was just on the TV and I was watching it. And I remember them talking and they're like, yeah, this player's very undersized for his position. He's 6'8".
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah,
it's like different levels.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose it's relative to your sport as well. Like, all the basketballers are so big, crazy athletes.
Yeah. So we'll close on this question. Who was your favourite rugby player growing up?
See, I played football until I was went into high school, so I would have been a huge footballer fan. And then my only association with rugby would have been Ulster, really. And going in with my dad and stuff, and I'd probably have to go for Paddy Jackson. He was great with me when I was young. He was great fun to hang around, and he taught me so much about rugby, and he was a goal kicker as well, and his mindset and stuff that he had. He was great for me. So probably Jacko. And it's great to see him doing so well now over in England.
Yeah. Do you have a particular routine that you do before kicks?
Not really. I wouldn't overthink my kicking too much. I kind of try and stay calm, and each kick that you take is going to be a new one every time. So
would you never would you say like you would never have like 4 steps back, 4 steps to the right?
Oh yeah, I'd have my run up. I'd be 5 steps back at about 45 degrees. But that's something that I've always had that doesn't really change. But I suppose after the 5 steps back, what I'm thinking at the end of my kick and stuff like that, it's just all about trying to stay calm for me and trusting my process. And when the process is done correctly, you usually get the correct outcome.
Yeah.
It's important to, for me anyway, to think like that.
Well, thank you very much, Mia, for coming on. I wish you every success for the games to come and obviously your future in an Ulster shirt.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. We need to get you on again.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good.